Hello, this is cartoonist Matt Groening welcoming you to the audio commentary for episode number 4F05, Burns Baby Burns, first broadcast November 17th, 1996.
Mark Kirkland, I had nothing to do with this show. I'm here as an observer, and I'm a great admirer of the work of my friend Jim Reardon.
This is Ian Maxim Graham. I had nothing to do with the show except for writing it.
David Cohen, proud member of the writing staff.
George Meyer, co-executive producer.
I'm Jim Reardon, the director.
Josh Weinstein, executive producer. Ian, now this was the first episode you
this
wrote
the first
for us,
one I
right?
wrote. I had been a consultant, a pure consultant, for about 3 or 4 months.
That's, we were very excited when Ian came on board, because we had a little backstory. It's like some of the writers we had never met before we hired them, but some people like Ian we had known from way back, where back in the early 90s, Ian, Steve Tompkins, Bill and I all worked on a game show in the very early days of the Comedy Network, and Ian was our boss, and he was really funny, and we always wanted to get him out here, and here he was.
And by the way, Ian is kind of like James Bond, for any of you people out there who want to know more about Ian, because he's like, kind of like, looks like Superman. He's really big and strong. I'm not kidding. I mean, he's a pretty good looking fellow.
You better say that.
And he seems to, you just keep finding out more things about him. And I remember everybody kind of thought, oh, Ian lives this jet setter lifestyle and he's super athlete. And then the topper was one day, I remember we were sitting in the writing room and everybody was talking, and then it fell silent. And in the back of the room, Ian was on the phone having a long conversation in French. And everyone, that's it. He is James Bond, and he's got some secret life going on.
It was gibberish that sounds like French.
Now, part of the, I was trying to remember the origin of why we did the cider mill, and I believe
It was viewer demand.
I think we had been talking about, let's do something about fall. Oh, now, Matt, I recall when we were watching this episode before, you made a comment about...
What? I don't remember.
The cell with... Owning the cell with Marge with the apple on her head.
Oh, yeah, that would be a very unhappy cell to own.
It retails for $12.
But we wanted to do something about fall, because stuck in California, a lot of us from the East Coast, we really missed fall. And there you go, a nice fall leaf.
And you can see our egomaniac director passing through the scene here.
They barely
even won.
Oh, yay.
I only appear in the train scenes. So every time there's a train on the show, one of the directors puts me in there because of my famous hatred of flying.
Well, I say let Harvard have its football and academics. Yale.
This must be one of the biggest pro-Harvard runs in the series, right?
Yes, not by Ian did not attend Harvard.
Yeah, you forced him to
now, I just want to point out that guy... is potentially based on this guy, Dink Stover, that all Yaleys have heard of, which is a fictional character who went to Yale in a famous book.
Dink Stover at Yale.
Yeah, Dink Stover at Yale. And I think Bill Oakley, when he pitched it, may have had that in his mind.
And, of course, the rail car is based on a lot of sort of robber barons used to have their own private rail cars to transport them across the country.
Yes, and that design is actually from a book of those things that I found in a used bookstore.
Why don't you get drunk and stumble around comically for my amusement?
Popularized in the Wild Wild West TV show.
Yeah, that was fabulous.
I think that was the first time that Smithers was ever drunk, and maybe the last.
That's right. It was only under Burns' order. Now, one of our favorite guys, Rodney Dangerfield. We got about 18 minutes to talk about him. But beginning with, a lot of us were huge fans of Rodney Dangerfield. His movies, and he, to give a little background quick on Rodney Dangerfield, he didn't really become famous until his late 50s, when he was going on a stand-up circuit in, I think, the 60s. But he became really popular in the 70s, early 80s, appearing in movies like Caddyshack and Back to School. And it's just one of our favorite guys and probably one of the top guys that we really wanted to have on the show. So we were very excited when he came. And I have a little piece of memorabilia that is Rodney Dangerfield's personal script that he left behind, including in the script, he also wrote a number of jokes, suggestions, some of which we used, and I'll point out when we get to them. Some of them are pretty good. And the best thing is Rodney Dangerfield's personal pen, which he left behind to. It's from the Honolulu Hilton. It's one of the. It could have, you can have a more Rodney Dangerfield-esque pen than from the Honolulu Hilton, baby. And so this is one of my three most prized Simpsons possessions. And when we get to the jokes that he suggested, I'll tell you, because he wrote it in his own hand.
Not enough room. Yes, there is. I just don't think it's a good idea.
I do remember that coming up with the character design for Larry was really hard because it had to look so much like Rodney and yet still have a little Mr. Burns in him at the same time. So it took quite a while.
Yeah, I see you have the Burns nose there.
Well, we also tried to give him a few of Burns' mannerisms sprinkled through when we could, like some of the way he walks or holds his hands or things.
Right. By the way, I highly recommend Rodney's autobiography called It's Not Easy Being Me, My Life of No Respect But Lots of Sex and Drugs. It's a great book, and it really gives you a lot of insight into how he thinks as a comedian.
I think this is a successful marriage of a caricature of a real person that we know and a Simpson crossover, this character here of Rodney.
It was a nice job, and it's a little bit Burnsy, too.
Yeah.
Right. It's a, I remember Jim talking about this, too. It's a perfect combination of Rodney Dangerfield and Burns. Who am I talking to? Now, the Rodney Dangerfield jokes are really hard to write.
We thought they'd be a lot easier. We thought they'd be just simply just bang them out, and they were much harder than Simpsons jokes. Well, I
hate to break it to you. Is it tough to make somebody who's funny already funny through satire?
It's more just hard to be actually funny.
They're just hard work. They're just
well,
like
it's
his
a
writers
tough area
because really
you're
hard.
Not trying to make fun. You're not trying to parody his style. You're just trying to do it. But then if you do it worse than him, you look bad. So it's a high level of difficulty.
And I think he tries out a lot of his material and winnows through the jokes that way based on the response.
We don't have that luxury.
Right. Now, what's interesting is when Rodney showed up, it was a very old-timey thing because he showed up with his manager. And in old days of comedians and their managers, like the manager is like the straight man, the guy Rodney would run all the jokes by. So even during the read for, I remember beforehand, he was like, oh, what do you think of this joke? You think that's pretty good, Rodney. But it was like there was a real interesting dynamic there.
It was 1941.
Jim Reardon told me a story about Rodney Dangerfield that he had started out trying to be a comedian and then couldn't stay in the business, and he got into something like the laundry business. And for many years he did that, and he would hear a joke or think of one, and he would write it down on a postcard, and he would put it in a laundry bag. And when he was finally ready to go back to show business, he had this laundry bag full of jokes.
Clark Gable's reckless use of the word damn. We sneaked into the nearby Peabody Museum.
Now, when we were saw this before, we were talking about where has there been a really great sequence in a museum in front of a diorama, and then we were talking about, I remember, it's David, it's your wedding, which you recently had in the Los Angeles Museum in front of those dioramas.
A beautiful sequence.
It looked pretty much like that.
In the South Seas.
Oh, one thing I want to talk about that I remembered about the origin of a story, because I think, Ian, you came to us.
I think I just had Burns' love child, right. And then...
Because I was going through my third prize position of deteriorating scripts in my garage, and I found an earlier story that we had wanted to do, which was that Burns met Burns and Grandpa in World War II. They were in the same division, and in Paris, they were in love with the same woman, and that woman had a love child. But that story eventually became Raging Abe Simpson. But when you said Burns' love child, we're like, oh, that's a great way to do it. So that was
speaking
wow.
of like World War I and Mr. Burns. Did you notice there was a thing before where he said what year he graduated from college, or you can calculate it? And so I worked it out. It means he was born in 1893, which sounds about right because I think he fought in World War I. And
well, he fought in World War II, by the way.
It's always dangerous to peg yourself to a date because then you're stuck with that date. When you want him to have, you know, known Abe Lincoln later, then you're stuck.
Well, didn't Marge and Homer graduate from high school in 1974?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like now, I noticed, I just want to point out, too, that's clearly, it looks like Snoopy, but Jim was very careful. They did not draw, if you freeze, you see, it does not have Snoopy's head, so Charles Schulz couldn't come at us from beyond the grave.
You never know.
When I began on The Simpsons, Homer was 33, and he was viewed as an older, middle-aged man. And now as we're all getting older, I think Homer's age is ratcheted up.
That's what we're all saying. It's when we were doing this, we were so young, and now we're older than Homer. And all his problems that I thought were so funny, I relate to.
I'm not looking forward to the day that I could be his father.
Yeah, this was kind of like the scene in Caddyshack where he tries to fit in with all the swells.
What do you mean, kind of?
I still think that his introduction in that movie is about the best intro of any character in any movie. The first 10 minutes of him is just unbelievable.
Now here, this is a joke that we actually had cut out, but after talking to Admiral Carstairs, he says, please, he's very sensitive about his age. And then we just cut away. But originally we had a joke, which was, Burns says, please, son, he's very sensitive about his age. And we wrote, I'm not surprised, that guy's got a medic alert bracelet that says, don't bother. A pretty good joke. But we didn't do it. Now, Rodney, this is a joke that no one has been able to decipher, but Rodney wrote in his own writing, I'm not surprised, the guy's got an old little black book that has somebody and somebody.
Adam and Eve, probably, right?
Let me see that.
So, can you see if you can see what it is? Relax. Hey, give my regards to me. That chef is obviously based on Chef Boyardee.
I often wonder what children think of episodes like this.
Oh, well, they don't. Well, my kids are starting to watch the show now, and it's kind of like what I experienced reading Mad Magazine. You would see the parody first, and then later you would see what it was based on, and it would start to make more sense.
Right.
So they're seeing stuff, making fun of various movies and TV shows they haven't even heard of, and then later they say, hey, this is kind of like that Simpson episode.
Yeah.
So they ripped him off.
It's time for my annual donation. I wonder how much I should give.
Well, frankly, test scores like Larry's would call for a very generous contribution. For example, a score of 400 would require a donation of...
The Yale bashing has resumed. Yes. And in Larry's
case, we... Oh, here's another thing. This is one of the small changes Rodney did. We passed it in at the buffet table. We had pull up a seat, Pop. You two chuckles. The food ain't great, but we had the portions are something, which is not, you know... It's a statement. Rodney changed it to terrific. The portions are terrific. That added that 0.5% more zing.
Hey, handsome, send the bill to my dad.
Okay, but the last guy who charged a drink to Burns turned up in a landfill.
Yeah, but it was worth it.
Yeah, what's everybody in this burg up against my dad?
The distinctive of Jim's shows is his timing and how rapid things happen. At the end of the day, I'd see him gather up exposure sheets, taking them home, and he would be doing them at home at night, put in a lot of hours on this.
Oh, this is some party. If it gets any livelier, a funeral's going to break out.
Now, we're coming up on another one of Rodney's small changes.
Dad, we got company. Make with the yakety yak yak.
Now, here it says make with the yakety yak yak. Ian had make with the yak. And here in Rodney's writing, he added addy yakky yak, which is yakety yak yak.
Much better.
Which is, I like.
Have you ever heard of this Ted Milhouse? He's a little wiener.
I like the Milhouse fashion, too, which we didn't often get to do, but we always liked.
Notice a little tugging at his tie.
Yeah, that was nice.
...of having a coarse, boorish ignoramus for a son.
I should go.
Oh, what's the matter, Pop? Don't you love me anymore?
That was a nice touch.
The fancy, fancy dinner they're having is a pile of chicken legs.
I like Homer giving him the empathetic pat on the back, but
very
he can't stop
joke
eating.
There by Ron Hauge.
Yeah, but Chinese motorcycle was like a real quintessential Rodney-style thing that was very hard to come up with, and kudos to Ron.
Of course, now the Chinese are eating our lunch. They will bury us.
Just spur them on. We'll show you
I wish I could afford a Chinese motorcycle.
In the Chinese version, it says falling apart like an American motorcycle.
Did he have any opinion about avoiding saying, I don't get no respect there, when he said, I don't get no esteem, no regard?
No, I think that was just us kind of screwing with people and not actually putting the line they expected.
Yeah, I think he was like, oh, you'd change it to esteem, eh? But one thing we liked about this episode is it's sort of the opposite of Homer's enemy, whereas Homer finally has a friend, a guy who like really appreciates Homer for being Homer and his Homer-y and that sort of thing. Which really liked about
I do remember him showing up, Rodney showing up at the read or at the record, being a little bleary-eyed. At 10 a.m. was not his best hour. I think he sleeps a little later.
I think we moved
later.
It to 11 in order to accommodate him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was still just sort of waking up. But you got to give the guy credit. He was pretty old.
Yeah.
You tell them you'll leave the money under the big net in the park.
And then down comes the net, right, Chief?
Hey, I like it. I like it a lot.
You get a double whammy on that joke, because if he had just put his finger to his chin, you already get a laugh off him not having realized it.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing in the basement? It's like you're hiding out down here.
Hiding out? Mark.
I also really like the design on Larry's casual clothes. They're very Rodney Dangerfield-esque.
Did we finally get rid of the Olmec head? It's still there, I see.
I think we always said...
Put it in?
People always ask, and we said, keep it in there.
Hey, how you doing?
There it is.
Well, what happened? You saw yourself in a mirror?
He's kidding, Mom. I just can't get the zoning permits.
Hey, that reminds me, Mom. Buckingham Palace called. They want their hat back.
I like, we were talking about this in another episode. I like when the Simpsons make actual jokes. Yeah. It's like they're real people. They're like, let's have some fun.
Like most maps, that says map of Springfield.
That's a real Batman-style
yes.
thing.
Now, Homer talking on a kazoo. This is a typical thing. There's a lot of talk of, like, how are we going to have a kazoo effect? Do we cycle the voice? Do we run it through something? And it's like, just give Dan a kazoo. And so we brought... So PA ran out to the kazoo district to find the kazoo, came back and gave Dan a kazoo, and he just said the lines through a kazoo. And... there you go.
And lost a lot of time haggling over the kazoo. Try to get the price down.
Eddie, did you trace the phone number?
Sure did, Chief.
555. Ah. Oh,
you know, kazoos are made out of plastic now. Not even metal.
Mine's ivory.
You did it at Simpsons Kazoo. That was the gift that year.
Yes. You know that somebody stole the Simpsons lunch cowbell?
Oh, I heard about that. That is truly shocking.
You know what? We were sort of glad. I think somebody lost it before. It was so sad because if you know, we were talking about the rewrite room, and you're looking forward to anything to get out or change, take your mind off the misery, and the bell would ring, and people were literally like Pavlov's dogs.
We should tell people that the bell rings to signify that it's lunchtime.
Right. And we would wait. We'd wait till Don, the PA, he's standing out on the balcony, and he's got the bell. And then all work would stop, even if the bell didn't ring, because...
Didn't we tell you... I think we talked about this before. John Collier and I bought the bell, because we thought it would be so funny how humiliating it would be if we all went running to eat when the bell rang.
It worked,
and it was really, really funny for about a week. Every time the bell rang, everyone would roar with laughter about how we were, like, pathetic trained dogs, and then after 1 week... the bell would ring and we would just run out without laughing to eat hungrily.
It's really sad. People would actually start playing. I remember people would walk in because food would be brought in a big crate. So people would actually go find an old crate and walk into the other room and plonk it on a table just to distract people.
Conan did that. Conan did this thing where he was tromping up the stairs and banging a box against the door to kick it open. And then it was just him with the cardboard box. And everybody, oh!
People would get really mad at that guy.
Yeah, don't fool massive writers and your food. It's sad.
I remember once, I don't know, as long as we're on the subject, I remember once we heard the PA coming up the stairs with lunch, and they used to carry a giant cardboard box that was like a comically big, like 4x4x4 foot cardboard box, and it was filled with, you know, styrofoam things of everybody's lunch, 30 lunches. And once we heard them tromping up the stairs and everybody was getting ready to, and then we heard a big cartoony crash. The box tumbled down the stairs.
That was a bad day.
Ian, did you write that joke? Scottish pay toilet?
No, I think we've pitched on those jokes forever. I have no idea who wrote that.
Now, one thing that we mention is this sequence ends in a theater, and it's actually a reference to a lot of famous crimes that ended up in a theater. It was John Dillinger
was
found
outside
the
red
at a theater.
Yeah.
Lee Harvey Oswald escaped to a theater. Can anybody tell me what movie he was watching?
I'm just guessing, but I'm going to say
Battle of Algiers.
No, it was a Van Heflin. It was a Van Heflin movie. I think it was Cry something.
Ow.
Who cares, I guess. But anyway.
And I thought I knew every Van Heflin movie.
Josh, for that, you win Rodney Dangerfield's pen.
All right.
Still warm. They can't be far.
Chief!
That's it. Now, in Vista, they're pretty good cops here.
Nice sticky sound on the feet there.
Yeah, I remember that. Again, I think it was a thing of like, how are you going to get the sticky sound? And someone just put gum on your shoes and walked off the tracks today.
I watched this when it came back and watched them edit the film, and I was very impressed by all this lighting. Beautifully laid out, I want to say.
Yeah, Jim, like you, Jim always has really good lighting.
I should have known you're the only one stupid enough to kidnap you. Now get down here so I can spank you in front of this gawking rebel.
Smithers, take off my belt.
With pleasure, sir.
Hold on, Mr. Burns. Maybe we did fake a kidnapping, but is that really such a crime? All your son wanted was a little attention, a little love. I'm a father myself, sir. And sure, sometimes my kids can be obnoxious or boring. Or stinky, but they can always count on one thing, their father's unconditional love.
Homer came this close to kissing Rodney Dangerfield there.
Now, here's the last of Rodney's written lines. We had, how about it, Pop, can you love me for who I am? And Rodney wrote, how about it, Pop, I know it's tough, but can you love me for what I am? Just that slight touch of who to what.
It's a better line.
I can't do it. It's just not me. I'm sorry, Larry. I can't be the family.
Now, coming up is Rodney's last joke that he added.
I got a wife and kids. Who would ever advise me? They're probably wondering where I went. I told them I'm going for coffee. That was a week ago.
Now, we just had... Oh, that's okay. I got a wife and kids. Geez, that reminds me. They're probably wondering where I went. And Rodney, rightfully, I think at this point in writing the script, we were like, we'll just get out quickly. And Rodney was like... You need a joke here. So he added a good joke.
Oh, this is where we try to mimic his dancing from Caddyshack.
This caused a lot of bafflement for anybody who was not a fan of Caddyshack or those big crazy 70s movies where people were like, why the hell are they suddenly partying and what's that music? But this is just like the ending of Caddyshack or ending of a lot of movies like that where it's a big party and this music, if I'm not mistaken, is
Journey?
This Journey from was used in Caddyshack too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, now I understand. I honestly never made it all the way through through Caddyshack. I told you this. I'm older than you guys, okay? A little slightly more mature. And Caddyshack did not. That gopher, I forget. When I saw that little gopher. Was it a gopher?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went.
Caddyshack, it's like half of it's really hilarious and half of it's sort of this boring love story.
But Bill Murray is riotous in that.
He's good. That's good.
That's a brilliant
guy. And Rodney was everybody's favorite guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually went in and pitched movies for Rodney, pitched vehicles for Rodney. And I sat down and it was before The Simpsons. And they said, no fish out of water stories.
What?
Okay. I had nothing.